Holmes & Hops is proudly supported by Platt Insurance, your local independent insurance agency offering auto, home, life, business, and farm insurance. They also have a team of specialists that help you with insuring your brewery or winery. Platt Insurance, helping you protect your tomorrow. For more information or a quote, please call them at 330-856-6244 or visit them on the web at plattinsurance.com. Hello, everyone. Lisa Resnick here, Holmes & Hops. I am sitting here at the studio with Joe Gregory.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, it's for those out there that are thinking, well, who is this Joe Gregory? Joe Gregory is actually someone who I've went to school with the entire duration of my education, right?
Pretty much. I mean,
he may be a grade below
right,
or two.
Right. But I graduated in Mooney in 97 and went to St. Charles from kindergarten. Right. So
his mom was my music teacher.
Yeah, and my dad worked at Mooney. So
that's right.
And my sister's 2.5 years older than me. So kind of in between both of us.
That's right. And then from there, you went to YSU, right?
I did. Yep.
What was your major at YSU?
I ended up with marketing management with a minor in econ.
Of course.
Yeah. But, you know, I interned at the LPGA every summer, so always wanted to try to get in that sports field.
Oh, I had no idea. That's pretty cool. How'd you get connected with that?
My older brother, he worked there out of college. So I started when I was 15.
Nice.
And, started when taking out the garbage and putting up fences and things like that. And then every summer, more and more responsibility. By the time I graduated college, they offered me a full-time job. So that's how I got into my sports track.
There you go.
Yeah.
So we are sitting here drinking some Scripted from Birdfish. This is your first Birdfish beer, right?
It is, yeah. I usually come back in town at Christmas, and it's usually just for a couple of days, and my family up here visits me down there. So I haven't had a lot of opportunity, and I'm still a big Great Lakes fan. I grew up, in Great Lakes. So the stout they do, they're the Blackout Stout and then another stout.
I just know their Christmas ale. Let's face it.
I've got a bunch of that back in Virginia.
Yep.
But the local stuff, I've had the Penguin City, but I haven't had this one yet. This will be the first time.
And Penguin City now has a Penguin City Light, which has definitely become one of my favorite beers as well.
This is really good, though.
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Good call.
8.9.
Yeah.
So Joe now lives in Richmond, Virginia.
Virginia Beach.
Virginia Beach.
Yeah. I work in Norfolk. So
okay.
My team's in Norfolk. Live in Virginia Beach. Spend a bunch of time in Richmond. I love Richmond. If there wasn't a beach in Virginia, I'd be in Richmond all the time. The food and drink scene in Richmond's awesome.
Yep.
The golf courses are really fun too. But I was in Richmond a couple weeks ago. But it's an easy commute straight down 64. So I'm back and forth between Richmond, Virginia Beach, and Norfolk all the time.
And what's the team that you have there?
Yeah, I'm general manager of the Norfolk Tides. We're the AAA affiliate for the Baltimore Orioles, so one level below Major League. And then the team in Richmond, the Squirrels, they're AA, and my buddy Parney is GM there with the San Francisco Giants. But so we're one level up from Richmond, one level below Baltimore, and I've been GM there. This would have been my ninth season.
And how'd you end up there? Because I know at one point in time, you were actually with the Scrappers, right?
Yep. Yeah. I started with the LPGA, the tournament in town it was the Giant Eagle LPGA Classic. And then I went to the Scrappers and I spent 2+ years there. And then there was a minor league hockey team came to town here, the Youngstown Steelhounds. And I became GM in their first season. Did that for a few seasons. And then there's an American Hockey League team in Norfolk that recruited me to be the GM there. So I went down there in 2008. And after 3 seasons of doing hockey, the baseball team asked me to be their GM. And the baseball team actually owned the hockey team. So that's how I was able.
Okay.
So I did both for 5 years. I was GM of both teams. And then after that, been the last 3 years or so that I've solely been focused on the baseball team.
So what does that occupation all entail?
It's mostly running the business of the sport. Like, I don't have any say-so. with who's playing, you know, who's starting, who we sign. At this level and in baseball especially, that's all done by the major league team. So the GM of the Baltimore Orioles is, you know, determining what's happening on the field. My responsibilities are more overseeing ticket sales, food and beverage, you know, overseeing the bookkeeping, the box office, all the marketing efforts, the merchandise operation. And then I'm on the board of directors or board of governors of the league. Okay. So then we vote on rule changes and the scheduling and in charge of the travel, all the logistical side of things. So pretty much everything but what happens on the field.
So I heard this, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because I am not your big sports guru, but just being attuned to the community and impacts to the community. I know with the minor league teams, they were discussing reducing the number of teams out there. Is the Scrappers on that list? Do you know? And do you have any?
The Scrappers were on that list.
Okay.
But that list had only been released once, and okay. It wasn't supposed to be released to begin with. Now they say that list has changed. And since that list came out, COVID came out, and, you know, the world's a different place since that came out.
See what happens when you try to change the rules?
I know. And like part of my job is lobbying Congress. Like, yeah. So we've been trying to get Congress on our side, you know, to help us with the negotiations of the new CBA with Major League Baseball. So, you know, for our reps, you know, Bobby Scott or Lane Loria or, you know, there's pretty much five that I've been calling on, and then there are state senators. So, yeah, we've been working on that project, even though we're not on that list. It's all, you know, there's 160 teams in minor league baseball. We're all trying to work together, you know, because even though I'm not on the list today, it doesn't mean I won't be on the list tomorrow.
Yes.
So we're working, and, you know, I worked for the Scrappers, love the Scrappers. You know, the general manager there, I was in his wedding. You know, I want the Scrappers to be here for a long time. So hopefully they are. And, you know, like I said, that list is going to be different than whenever it was published the first time. So hopefully, you know, there's still baseball in Niles next year.
Well, hopefully they also decide not to make a determination because of COVID. I don't know what they base their numbers on. I'm assuming it's revenue.
Well, a lot of it is Major League Baseball. There's been some thinking out there as far as they don't need as many players in the system as they used to do. Or you used to have.
Okay.
That, you know, with video and, you know, the development process has changed for players. So okay. They don't need as many guys playing against other guys. They could just have guys in spring training, break them down on video, and do more of the analytical side of things as opposed to watching them play. Now, not every team thinks that, but if you reduce the amount of players you have, then you don't need as many teams because there's not as many guys to play for those teams. So it's nothing, frankly, against Mahoning Valley. I think more where they get messed up is they start looking at facilities.
Okay.
And I mean, I like Eastwood Field.
Oh, yeah.
It's Eastwood Field.
Well, Youngstown State University, I don't know if they still do, but when I went to YSU, they would play.
Oh, yeah.
At Scrappers.
Yeah. Yeah. They played there for sure. The field itself is great, but like the clubhouse isn't as big as our clubhouse, or, you know, the workout facilities aren't as big. And a lot of it is player amenities, you know, what the player's environment is when they're not playing. And
okay.
Not that it's bad by any means at Eastwood Field. It's just not as big maybe as some other places. And even with us, we're a AAA ballpark, but, you know, we have improvements we need to do as well.
Of course. Well, that's constant.
Yeah.
Especially in buildings and building improvements and everything. It's a constant update. As soon as you're done updating one section, you have another area. And then by the time you're done finalizing everything, then you circle back over to the original
For
section.
Sure. I mean, our ballpark was built in 93, and, you know, it's the standards in 1993 were different, and we were the greatest minor league stadium when it was built. Like, we were one of the first throwback retro stadiums, won all sorts of awards. But, you know, 1993 to, you know, 2020, a lot has changed. And same thing with Eastwood Field, 1999, I think it opened, to today, requirements are different. Now,
yep.
Eastwood Field's great. There's plenty of teams playing in more difficult situations, but you know, it's just going to be a numbers game. And I think I'm pretty sure Eastwood Field has already dedicated money to doing renovations and additions, and like the team in Erie was on that list, and they already had like $20 million in improvements lined up from the state. Wow. So they're, as far as I know, before COVID at least, they were doing those improvements. So, you know, the landscape couldn't be different whenever we get through this. So who knows? I mean, I hope all 160 get through.
Yes.
We'll see how that goes. But I mean, there's no reason there shouldn't be baseball in Niles.
Well, it's because it's such a, it would impact the community mm-hmm. tremendously. And it is interesting on the higher level. It's not that they don't necessarily see the connectivity or understand. I mean, baseball is the American traditional for tradition. Sure. So, right. I mean, and it's beyond just the players. It's the people that come see the players. It's, I mean, it's all the nostalgia that you can want in any game that you see. And their connection with the community, I think having the Scrappers in Niles and so locally based to the Mahoney Valley is such an added amenity to our community that I would hate to see that disappear.
Yeah. And then they do so much in fundraising efforts, local mm-hmm. charities, little league organizations, you know, and then it's, you know, the families that can't afford to go to, you know, an Indians game or a Pirates game that, you know, for what a ticket and hot dog and, you know, soda, popcorn costs at, you know.
Oh, yes.
No.
Extraordinary.
Exactly. So, and that's where you see players, you know, for the first time, like Francisco Lindor, who's, you know, an all-star for Cleveland, you know, kids saw him up close and in person at Eastwood Field. So that got them to become a fan of Francisco Lindor or yep. CC Sabathia or whoever it was when they came through Mahoning Valley.
I think there's a, it might be the Tides that plays for the Indians now. It's either the Scrappers or the Tides, but my youngest son has a favorite player that was at either of those teams that's currently playing for the Indians.
I mean, a lot of players came through Mahoning Valley that's on Cleveland now. Jose Ramirez. I mean, too many to count. I mean, so yeah, the possibilities are endless. I remember when I was working for the Scrappers, Victor Martinez was playing for the Indians, and he came through Mahoning Valley. And when a lot of those guys, especially that lower level of ball, they stay with host families because they can't afford to yes. have a place on their own.
So Victor, I've been trying to convince my husband.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, Lisa.
But it's great, like, because Victor,
I'm like, how cool would that be for our boys?
Oh.
Right?
Yeah. No, I mean, I know people that do it year after year, and you build some great relationships. And Victor Martinez, you know, went to Cleveland, became an all-star, you know, all-star with the Tigers. And anytime, like, when he'd come back, play against the Indians as a Tiger, he'd have the host family that he stayed with however many years ago come up, and, you know, he'd sign autographs. And a lot of relationships are built at that lower level of ball that, you know, last a lifetime, that, you know, it'd be a shame to miss that opportunity if there wasn't a team there anymore.
100%. Besides, I'm not sure I would know what they would do with that stadium.
There's options, perhaps, with, you know, independent ball, or like you said, YSU, or
that's true.
But it would never be the same without having, especially that Cleveland Indians affiliation with so many Indians fans here. Even if you found something to go in there, it would never be as good as what is in there right now.
So everybody get out as soon as we can. That is, after COVID is finally over, definitely get out there and support the Scrappers. I mean, that's the biggest thing. We have to make sure that we're utilizing this great amenity that we have.
Yeah, so. And you know, tell your elected officials, you know, I know Congressman Ryan has signed on to the bill that is going through Congress, but, you know, talk to your state senators, your state reps. Even if you don't live in Mahoning Valley, there's, you know, 40 teams that were on that list. And, you know, any support and all support is going to be needed to make sure that those 40 teams play ball next year.
Yep. I agree completely with you. So how long have you been in Norfolk or Virginia Beach?
I moved in July of 2008, so just over 12 years now.
And how have you seen the brewery scene grow there?
It's amazing how it's blown up. And everyone kept saying, you know, oh, the bubble's going to burst, and then 10 more open up.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a great scene in Norfolk, Virginia Beach, and Norfolk and Virginia Beach are next to each other. And between Norfolk, Virginia Beach, and Chesapeake, they're the three biggest cities in Virginia. So like, yes. It's a huge population, big military town, you know, the center of the Atlantic Fleet is there. it's a cool vibe, you know, good intermingling, you know, kind of cross cut of, you know, society. But when I got there, there wasn't a huge scene. It was, you know, in 2008, it was just kind of growing. There was Legend, I think, was the, like, almost the original, like, grandfather of craft beer in Virginia out of Richmond. Right around the time I got there, O'Connor kind of came onto the scene. And I think Kevin O'Connor might have interned at Legend, maybe. He interned at a local brewery, maybe St. George's. But anyway.
Wow.
So Kevin created O'Connor. And O'Connor, I believe, is definitely the biggest in the Hampton Roads area of Virginia. I know Devil's Backbone was a big one before they got bought out.
Yes. Did that recently just happen, the buyout?
I feel like it's been like 2 years or so since they got bought out.
That's recent for me.
Yeah. And Devil's Backbone is awesome. You know, I enjoy their stuff. We had them on tap. But Kevin created O'Connor Brewing. They, you know, got big, moved to a second location or a bigger location. They closed the first location. And, you know, I was in there. They had a think tank society, you know, kind of like a MVP or VIP club. So I was in that for a while.
Nice.
Back when I was just with the hockey team, so this would have been 09, 10-ish probably, I got them to make a beer just for our hockey team. It was called Hop Trick instead of Hat Trick, and there's three different hops that they used for that.
Nice.
And it was only available as a red IPA that we did at our hockey games.
Okay.
And then once I became GM of the baseball team, I worked with Kevin for walk-off Kolsch because we figured for hockey – you know, it's one beer for baseball. You want a lighter beer, you know, when it's 100 degrees in July.
100%.
You know, Kolsch is going to be a lot better.
Yeah.
So we did walk off there. And walk off still around, you know, it's been tweaked how, you know, as far as how it's presented in packages. You know, we had cans where they put our whole home schedule on there. And so it was good for us just to get out in the area where it wasn't just on tap at our games, but, you know, people throughout Virginia could buy it. So it's a good marketing piece for us as well.
I love the idea that you put the schedule on it.
Yeah, they did great artwork. You know, we got a little blurb about the team, but then the schedule. And this year they were doing it in variety packs that were going into Total Wines, like some big stores. And they were actually putting our schedule on the outside of the box because it was like one of each of like 12 different beers.
I'm surprised we don't have a Total Wine around here.
I know. They're pretty great.
They are pretty great. For those that don't know, like, it is like the mecca of wine and beer. I mean, it's Sam's Club.
Yeah.
But just straight up alcohol.
Yeah. And in some cities, it's liquor too. Like,
yeah.
I know in like South Carolina, in Vegas, you know, depending on the market. No, in Virginia Beach,
Virginia.
Yeah, no.
In Ashburn, there was no liquor either. No.
It's funny, while I was, like, today, I've been bourbon hunting up here because it's so hard to find good bourbon in Virginia.
Yes.
So I have a suitcase that will be full of nothing but bourbon going back to Virginia tomorrow.
That's awesome. Yeah. There's actually a really great place that makes bourbon up in Geneva.
Hmm.
And they're connected to the winery. I can't believe the winery's name is escaping me, but it's a red barn.
Hmm.
And they make really good bourbon.
Really?
I mean, every time I go there, even when I lived in Virginia, I made sure that when we did the wine tour that we made a pit stop there so I can bring my husband back some of the bourbon that they have. And he even, when we were up there just a couple weekends ago, was like, we just need to stop there so I can grab some because you could only get it there.
Yeah. I haven't tried that one. I'll have to add that to the list.
I want to say it's Red Flag bourbon. I am not a bourbon drinker or a scotch drinker or really anything. Well, beer, obviously, and wine are pretty much my go-tos. Every once in a while, I'll dabble into vodka, but pretty much I just stick with the other two.
Yeah. I moved more into the liquor side, just trying to cut down on all the carbs I was taking in.
But yes.
It's tough because we do have so many good local breweries, and I'm a stout guy. And So
stouts are going to be on the higher caloric intake.
Yeah. So they're, I don't drink them nearly as often as I used to. And as hot as it is in Virginia Beach in the summers, it's not always stout weather for drinking something heavy and dark. But that we do. I'm fortunate. We have a bunch of great local stouts down there.
Yeah. People here don't know humidity and heat like we know it there.
Yeah.
At all. But how many breweries have you been able to go to while you're there? Have you hit them all up? Do you guys have, like, we have here a tour, like basically you hit up all the breweries, you get stamp, and then you get like a fanny pack or a pair of sunglasses or a shirt from one of the breweries.
You know, I think they used to have a tour. I haven't seen it in a while. I kind of stick to my core ones. Like there's two that I could ride my beach cruiser to.
Oh, you know? There you go.
So like Commonwealth.
You are like a beach guy now, aren't you?
I live like two and a half blocks off the Chesapeake Bay.
Wow.
So yeah, I've got a beach cruiser that I can ride to Commonwealth in 10 minutes. And there's another place called Pleasure House, and they're actually both on Pleasure House Road.
there you go.
Yeah. So Pleasure House just moved there, and it's across the street from where my dog's vet. But Commonwealth is my favorite. They actually make the best stouts as far as I'm concerned. But like I said, they're close to my house. And then, you know, we're fortunate to have O'Connor, and then Smart Mouth is kind of was the second big one to come in after Commonwealth. And they have, you know, their original Norfolk location, and they opened up a pilot house at the Virginia Beach oceanfront. And I'd say, you know, after O'Connor, then comes Smart Mouth. And, you know, Commonwealth, you know, could be third, I don't know. But there's others I haven't been. Like, there's one called Big Ugly in Chesapeake I haven't been to. There's one Wasserhund. It's all, like, dog-themed beers.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's in Virginia Beach. And they have amazing pizza. Like, most of the breweries down there all have food trucks because the way the ABC laws are down there. And
you have to have. So, there, in order to have your brewery and sell beer, or even a winery, you have to have food accessible for people as well.
Yeah, but if it was your food and your kitchen, then you have to do like a 60-40 percentage.
Yes.
I don't know if it's 60% has to be food or 40% has to be food, but like they'd never be able to keep up with the food side for most places. Now, like I said, Wasserhund has amazing pizza, though. I think people go order their pizza without getting their beer. They're able to make that work. But yeah, they're by far the exception. Another big one we have down there is New Realm. They're Atlanta based, I think. There's a San Diego brewery, Green Flash, that opened up a legit, like, big brewery to service the East Coast. They made some poor financing decisions, and they debt financed and lost the whole thing.
Oh, that stinks.
Yeah. So Green Flash closed, but then New Realm came in and took that over. So as far as like capacity and, you know, square footage, they're the big dog, but you know, they're not originally from the area. But now we do have some great choices, and you know, for a beer enthusiast, and
yes,
you know, it's a great place to live.
That would be awesome. Now, have you seen, when, because you've been there for a while and all those beer breweries have been popping up, as you said, have you seen any difference in the community, the housing, their footprint becoming bigger and bigger, individually, as individual brewers, and their impact to their communities? Kind of like Great Lakes, as you've seen there.
O'Connor, I think, is the one that is definitely a big community player, as far as, like, they make another Kolsch to make money or raise money for sustainable seafood. And, you know, just, like, they've got...
Wow.
They have a lot of, like, community focused events there, like Kevin,
and they're probably very much into preservation and everything because of their proximity to the bay.
Yeah, like they do an oyster stout called Otis. O'Connor Dry Irish Stout is what Otis stands for.
Nice.
Those are two different stouts. Otis is the dry Irish, Bold Man is their oyster stout. And
okay,
whoever, someone once said, it takes whoever was the first man to try an oyster was a bold man.
This is true.
Yeah.
And we thank him for that.
But it's all made with, like they do locally farmed oysters. I forget how they do it. And I'm sure people listening to this know more about it than I do. But I believe, you know, that goes back to help sustainable oyster farming in, I don't know if it's the Lynn Haven or the James, but or just Chesapeake Bay region in general. But yeah, they do a lot, you know, on the environmental side of things as well. You know, whether it's sustainable seafood, whether it's the, you know, clean water in the Chesapeake, they're definitely at that level. And, you know, they've gotten to the point where they're available outside of the state. You know, they're not just Hampton Roads, you know. You know, I know they get into West Virginia. I don't think they're in Ohio yet, but, you know, they're.
Maybe you can make that plug.
I've talked to them about it, as well as I've said to our local beer distributors to get Great Lakes down in Virginia Beach.
Yes.
But O'Connor's El Guapo IPA is amazing. It's an agave IPA.
Ooh.
I haven't checked the stats lately, but I believe it was like the one beer distributor. It was like the most popular beer behind Bud Light. Like not just the most popular craft beer. It was like the number one IPA. Like if you have a chance to have an El Guapo, you know, do yourself a favor.
That's just amazing to see that how much our palates have expanded when it comes to beer. That it's the second to Bud Light.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, El Guapo has earned it. It was like the first big that I saw. I mean, crap beer to go just kind of almost mainstream.
And yes.
I think it's how Devil's Backbone Vienna Lager was before they got bought. Like it was, you know, you didn't think of Vienna Lager as a local beer anymore. It was just, you know, if a bar or restaurant didn't have it, it would be weird. Like, as opposed to, you know, oh, great, they have it. It's like, why don't you have it?
What's funny about it, too, is that these local craft breweries, they don't market the same way that you would have, obviously, Bud Light, Miller Lite, and some of their commercials are great. And their reach when it comes to all facets of marketing that we have at our fingertips these days. But yet, their impact and their gain is extraordinary, that you do somewhat think, well, if they had the same marketing dollars as Anheuser-Busch, like how huge would they be?
Right. And you know, if they had the capacity to be able
to brew.
Right. I mean, there's, you know, they only have so many square feet to brew with, and they've got some amazing beers, but you know, with the lead time and how long it takes to make some of them, as great as they are, it's like O'Connor makes, as much as I bragged about Commonwealth stouts, my number, like for all of the stout category, I like Commonwealth for like one stout. There's a Turkish coffee stout called Ibrik that O'Connor does, but like people will line up when it's available and then it's gone.
That's like Hetty Topper, the Alchemist. So yeah. That up in Vermont. So you are limited to how many cans you can get.
Yeah.
So I believe it's two four-packs per person. Because I remember standing in line and telling my husband, pretend like you don't know me.
Yeah.
So we can get more.
Yeah. Yeah. Smart Mouth, the other local player down there in Norfolk, they did one called Saturday Mornings. And it was, the can looked like a box of Lucky Charms.
Oh, and that's awesome.
Somehow in advance, it got on to like the Tonight Show, I think. And like the line was, you know, around the block would be like a conservative number, but like you couldn't get it. And I was fortunate. There's one local restaurant called 1608 Craft House that has great food and great beer selection. I randomly went in there for brunch on a Saturday and I walked in and saw a chalkboard and it said, you know, Saturday Mornings available. Like, oh, that's weird. And I walked in, sat down, and like I got a glass, but like it was just, there was something they didn't announce that they were going to get it. They just put it on Instagram, like, hey, it's available today. And I just see all these people coming in and they could get one pint. And that, you know, keg blew in the time I had brunch. It was tapped and blown in that.
Talk about being at the right place at the right time, right?
Yeah. Glad I chose that place for brunch.
I know.
Yeah.
That's insane. It is absolutely amazing to me to see what breweries have been doing, how much they have grown to be a staple. I like to even think that they're almost at anchor level to be able to draw in other people, communities, and businesses. Because typically, if breweries do well, then you know other areas, especially in retail and restaurants, will also do well nearby the brewery as well. And also, the connection with, of course, beer and sports, and to see that community, that you guys are going beyond just your standard Miller Light, Bud Light, Coors Light, or Natty Light. I don't know.
Yingling's big down there.
Yingling. It is. It's an import.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I love always seeing Yingling on the import list. Right.
Imported from Pennsylvania.
I was like, since when was PA not part of the U.S.?
Yeah.
But,
and it's funny, you mentioned being anchors, and I see that in Richmond in the Scott's Addition neighborhood up there, which was, you know, kind of sketchy and, you know, industrial. And then like the Vale, Ardent, you know, I can't remember all the breweries that are in there, but, yep, you know, all these breweries are moved into that neighborhood. Then you start getting some great local restaurants that move into that neighborhood. And now that neighborhood's like the cool neighborhood to be.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's starting to happen in Norfolk where O'Connor is. The Vale opened from Richmond, opened a location in that neighborhood. But you're seeing, you know, an industrial part of town with, you know, limited residential now being a desirable area to be in.
That's right.
But yeah, Scott's Addition was the first place I saw it. And I think that's happening in Norfolk. And, you know, it's definitely the trend. It's not the outlier. It's going to be the new normal.
It is going to be the new normal. And I think that people enjoy going to breweries, and especially probably people our age group enjoy going to breweries because it's a much more relaxed environment. It's very community oriented. And it is one of those places, breweries and wineries, you could typically bring your kids, and it is very friendly towards kids as well as animals.
Yeah, I bring my dog.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't have any kids, so my dog is my better half right now.
There you go.
But yeah, and he's popular when I bring him around, and his leash is a Commonwealth Brewing leash, and nice. Yeah.
Do you have a different leash when you take him to like O'Connor's?
No, just the one. But there's a great brewery down there called the Thin Brew Line, which opened in the last year, and some good friends of mine operate that place. It's a police themed. So like they've got one of the owners is a Virginia Beach policeman.
Okay.
And they've got like a cell door in there from Alcatraz, and their bathrooms, like the one is all looks like the cell from Shawshank Redemption. And another one is, I think, The Usual Suspects. And like, it's a very cool place.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And you know, their beers
are. Have you ever met the owners, brewers there?
Oh yeah. 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 They're friends of mine. And like they do, the reason I brought it up with the dog theme is they also do like the brew dog of the day. So, you know, Archer, yep, you know, he's scheduled to be the brew dog of the day. It's a little farther from my house, and I was going to go last week, but my dog doesn't do well with rain. So that scrapped that. But because they had some cool thing going where they had a, you know, taco food truck with my favorite taco place, but they also had an axe throwing like truck, which was the first one that I saw as like a mobile unit. So they had like a taco place, great beer, axe throwing, like all in one spot, but the weather didn't cooperate that day.
It never does, does it?
No.
Like even on a nice sunny day, there always seems to be like something that impacts whatever you're doing out there. Always seems to happen.
Definitely.
How many other, do you know in your stadium, how many other different beers that you have?
It depends how you look at it, you know, between like our restaurant area, our suites. We have one stand dedicated just to craft beer behind home plate. Like when I got there, it was like ice cream and candy. And we do a couple, you know, $100 maybe in sales that day. And then I'm like, no, that's going to be a craft beer stand. So yep. I think we put like 6 taps in there originally. And then I think we're up to 12 right now. And it's only because we don't have the cooler space behind it to put more kegs in there. But by far, that's, you know, I think sales would probably increase 30-fold.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
So,
scrappers, if you're out there listening, this might be another good way to draw in some business.
Yeah.
And revenue.
I mean, you have like bombers in there too, like the big 24-ounce cans, because that's a thing with the ballpark. A lot of people, they don't want to get out of their seat as often or at all. So when they get up or get a beer, they want one of the 22, 24-ounce big oil can beers, yes, which isn't an option for craft beer.
Yes.
So that is one of the difficult things with that. But all that being said, still they'll get in line for that craft beer stand. But like 12 ounce cans don't sell. 12 ounce bottles don't sell. 16s maybe. And some of the breweries have 16s.
Yep.
But you know, we have to be careful with how we do it. You know, we have a limited space, but we're lucky that we have some great local beers, and we try to keep all those craft as local craft as well. Because, you know, they're great partners and they do well, we do well, you know, it's, you know, a good relationship.
That's exactly right. And then also when you're done with that, Birdfish.
And I already finished the first one. I just poured myself some.
I know. He liked it a lot. But and afterwards, you're going to try some of this Revved Up Biker Brewhouse, which is the only brewery internationally at a Harley-Davidson.
Really?
Yes. It's located inside the Harley-Davidson. Oh, this one's good. And Biker Brewhouse typically is a little bit lower on the ABV, which is nice too.
So where's
with all of their beers?
Where's the location here?
It's at the Harley Davidson shop in Austintown.
Oh, in Austintown, okay.
Yep.
Like I was reading the address and I wasn't sure where Patriot Boulevard was.
Yeah. Oh, yes. So it's over by the Quaker Steakman Lube off of 680.
Gotcha.
Or no.
No, it's yes. 46 and 80.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're like 680 ends, yes. Pretty much.
Yes.
Yeah. I was upset. We had a Quaker Steak near us in Newport News, which would be like a half hour from my house, but it recently closed. And I was so excited when it opened and heartbroken that it closed.
Don't you have a Handles nearby you?
We had two, and those both closed.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we had one in Virginia Beach and one in Williamsburg. The guy that owned it was originally from the east side of Youngstown. And I met him. We did a YSU alumni event at one of my games.
Okay.
So I was able to get my chocolate pecan ice cream down there, but yeah, no more.
Oh, man.
I know. It was a sad day.
Was that due to COVID or just in general?
No, it closed in advance of that.
Okay, then. That's a major fault of Virginia Beach and Norfolk area because they obviously don't know the best ice cream in the world.
I don't know if it was a business decision or if the guy retired. And the sad thing, like the one in Virginia Beach that closed, you know, it got torn down and was replaced by a Taco Bell. And
it's like,
the world doesn't need more, you know,
Taco
gorditas.
Bell. Yeah. I don't think I've eaten at Taco Bell since college.
No, well, there's been some late nights where it's come in handy, but yeah, I couldn't tell you the last time I had it.
That's awesome. Well, thank you very much for joining me on today's podcast. Yeah,
thanks for the invite. I really enjoyed the talk.
Yeah, definitely. So next time you come into town, we are actually going to go out to these breweries and hit them all up.
Perfect. Yeah, I'd love to have some of these in person and, you know, expand my palate. And thanks for introducing me to two great beers.
Oh, yeah. You need to hit up Modern Methods, Noble Creature, Paladin. Like, I mean, there's head on out to Sandy Springs, Crooked. I mean, there is a mass amount of really good craft brewers around this area, which is pretty spectacular. And I've said before, you can go into a brewery and nowadays anybody could start thinking that they could open up a brewery. But and I've tasted some of their beers that haven't necessarily been the quality of the beer that I've had around here.
Yeah. No, the quality can range, but when you find a good one, you know it.
Oh, yeah. No. Definitely. And these guys are talented.
Definitely.
Guys and gals are talented. So thank you very much. Cheers.
Cheers.
And good luck to the Tides.
Great. Thank you. Hopefully we'll be playing come April.